Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tony Vicenda, and I am incredibly excited this week to sit down and talk about what really matters with Claire Leo. Now, you may never have heard of Claire Leo, even though you should have. She's pretty amazing. But Claire is a young person whose life I got to pour into as a youth minister at a parish. It was my first position ever. And we've stayed in touch loosely online, but we haven't had a lot of time to sit down and have conversations over the course of the last 8 years. But we did catch up a few weeks ago when I was in Indianapolis, and I was thrilled when she said yes to being on the podcast and hearing a little bit about her journey and what's been going on in her life. So I hope that you guys enjoy my conversation with Claire Leo. Hey, Claire, how's it going today?
Hey, it's going pretty good. It's freezing cold here, but I'm inside, so not so bad.
Great. Could you tell people a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're at, what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Claire. I am 27, about to be 28. I live in Indianapolis with my husband, John, and our two cats. For work, I do research and data entry for a pharmaceutical information conglomerate, which basically just means I look up information about drugs and enter them into a database for pharmacists to then use. Although I'm veering off on a different path from that, I'm in library science school right now, getting my master's degree to hopefully go and be a public librarian in about 3 years. And that's about it.
What are you most excited about library science?
Well, aside from the fact that I will get to spend all day in a library, which is, I think 5-year-old me would just be over the moon about that. I'm really excited to get more involved in the community around here. As it is now, you know, I go to work, I go to school, I come home. I do some light political work, but not very much. And as a librarian, you really get to sort of reach into your community and become part of it in a way that I think is pretty special. So I'm looking forward to doing more of that.
So it's really the seeking of political power that's driven you to this place of wanting to be a librarian.
Definitely. Step one, librarian. Step two is queen of, I'll start with the United States, and then North America will come after that in sort of a natural progression.
Awesome. Very good. So let's just kind of riff on that for a second. I want to ask a couple questions to help people get to know you a little bit better. But if you were stuck on a desert island and you could take three books with you, what three books would you want to take?
I'm assuming I can't cheat and bring the entire Harry Potter series with me, because that would be one book. So I'll just go ahead and say Goblet of Fire. It's long and it's good. Let's see. For number two, I would probably have to go with The Hobbit, because if I'm stuck on a desert island, I probably need some comfort, and that's like the equivalent of comfort food to me. And then number three, I would have to go with... See, this is like making me choose between children. It's just not fair.
It's easier than you think. I've got four of them. I could tell you which one I would leave behind right now.
Well, you're colder than me, Tony.
True.
I think for number three, I would probably have to go with, I don't actually have a book in mind, but I would go with a theory book, some sort of rhetorical theory book that I haven't read yet, because it would actually force me to read it. And that's been a problem with me, is I just kind of reread my favorite and I never read anything new.
And so people who don't know what rhetorical theory is, because I think that's what your undergrad was in, what is rhetorical theory?
So rhetoric is just communication, specifically communication with a purpose of impacting something or getting someone to change their mind, getting someone to do something. And then theory would be the mechanisms of how that works, the sort of thinky stuff behind it. So how people communicate, why they communicate, like what writing is. There's actually debate about that. So things like that.
So while you were stuck on a desert island, you would want a book that was really good at helping you change other people's minds.
You know, yeah. like I'm a hopeful person. So eventually I would get off the desert island and then I would go back to talking to people, presumably.
Presumably, right? Yeah. No, that's awesome. So let's go with another one. Do you, when you squeeze the toothpaste tube, how do you squeeze it? Middle of it or bottom?
I squeeze from the bottom and John squeezes from the middle. And it's kind of a touchy subject.
So why do you feel the need, based on your toothpaste, you know, squeezing preferences, to control everything around you? No, I'm just kidding. So I'm certainly a from the middle person, but I also like, that's kind of only initially, like as it gets about halfway deflated, I certainly switch to the bottom because it's all about ease of use. And I think it's like middle is easier to start with, but you got to go to the bottom before it gets too empty. So,
yeah, I'm kind of more on the plane of getting the most out of it. And I think if you just start from the bottom, it's a good pattern to get into.
Yeah. What is one thing you think everyone should experience before they die?
I think probably everybody should travel somewhere that they've always wanted to travel. And it doesn't have to be a big trip, but like just see something that you wanted to see or that you've read about or seen in a book or a movie. Just go see it. Way different in real life.
And then let's see, let's do another book one. If you could write any book and it would become a bestseller, like, you know, when you write it, it's going to be a bestseller. What would the book be about and what would the title be?
So already knowing that it's going to be a bestseller. Okay. I would write the most basic book about how awesome my cats are, explaining to everybody why they're the best one, like the little details of their lives that no one else would find interesting at all, but they're forced to read it because it's a bestseller. So that's just fate. And it would be called Catastrophe, but like Cat-astrophe. halfway through saying that, I realized that's probably the most librarian thing I've said so far. So I kind of feel like I've made it already.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, go ahead and give her the degree, guys. Like, go ahead and hand her the keys to the library. She's ready to take over. that's awesome. Well, I want to just ask the question that's kind of at the crux of what we do here on The Threshold. And that's if somebody walked up to you on the street and asked you to explain in a few minutes or less what you believe, how would you answer that question?
Yeah, I would probably say that I believe there are so many different ways of thinking out there. There are so many different religions and paths and spiritualities and deities and religious texts that if you don't know and if you don't have that inner faith that's pulling you to one or the other, telling you like this one's right, that one's right, this is how it works, that there's room to just sort of respect and appreciate where they all come from and the good that they bring to individual people and to societies, and to sort of filter through for yourself, is something good for me? Is it going to make me a good person? And at the end of the day, I believe that everybody has a duty to each other and to themselves to really closely examine if the things that are in their lives are making them a better person. Like my husband and I have a saying that especially comes up if we've had an argument or if one of us has wronged the other, which is that we can always be better. And I think that's probably the crux of what I believe, is that no matter how good you are or how bad you are or what you believe or don't believe, you can always be better. And it's really important to be conscious of that, not just sort of passive, but look for opportunities to be better. Look for things in your life that aren't making you better and sort of question why that is, what you can do about it. Yeah, about it.
Awesome. So what makes you better?
The things I think that really stick out in my life and make me better are John, first of all, and my family, my parents and my brother, and then my friends here in Indianapolis back at home. I think for me personally, reading a lot makes me better, and sort of pursuing more intellectual pursuits. It's not that way for everybody, but for me, I think that sort of expansion makes me better. And just a sense of community. I feel like when I'm thinking about how I can make, not the world, I don't, that's a really big thing that can make me feel anxious, but when I'm thinking about like how I can make my neighborhood better, how I can make Indianapolis better, and that sort of thing pulls me in a good direction, in a productive direction, I think.
So if somebody walked up to you and asked you what religion you are, how would you respond to that?
You know, that's a really hard question, and I think about it a lot. The best I could come up with, I think because of my natural aversion to labels, is generally apathetic. it's not like, I feel like all these words are, they have meanings, right? So Catholic means that you follow at least part of what Catholicism said, maybe not all of it, but you consider yourself that. Agnostic means that you're questioning it, or you're sort of, you're up for whatever. But like, I'm not in that place really where it's something I'm questioning or looking for. Like atheist, I think, means you know there's, you know, whatever. And I wouldn't say that at all. I think I'm at this point in my life where it's sort of like, when I die, whatever is waiting for me, I'll be like, oh, well, that was it. Cool. Got it. It's just not something that's at the forefront of my mind in a way that I feel comfortable saying that I am anything.
I'm actually not going to lie. I'm really excited about the way I get to phrase this next question, even though I know part of the answer. But did you grow up apathetic?
No, I was raised Catholic. I think, as you know, I was raised in the church, went to Sunday school, went to youth group, went to youth leadership group. So just like beyond the point of being confirmed, you were my youth leader. Let's see, then I went to college. I would still probably have called myself Catholic for the first 2 years of college. Although that's probably when I started lapsing out of the community a little bit more. I just didn't really look for one, in my college town. I would still go back. Like if I was home for a weekend, I would go to church. And then I think just over the next few years, I kind of lapsed out of the community, which then of course, you know, if you're not actively practicing something, it stops having as big of an effect on your life, I think. And then I don't know when I would have stopped calling myself Catholic, probably in my 20s. I just sort of realized that with the church and the community, I wasn't really on the same political level anymore. And that sort of, I think, led to some discomfort in like attending services or seeking out a community where I was. And then without the community there, that's sort of probably when I got more to the apathetic level. And not to say like, I feel like apathetic has this sort of tone to it, like complete lack of care. And it was less of that and more of like, there are things that to me were taking priority, that I just didn't really have the mental focus to work through religion okay. at that time.
Okay. No, that's awesome. I want to step back because I do actually want to talk about like you and I's kind of first significant interaction. So I met you on maybe we interacted before this point. I don't recall. And if that's horribly offensive, I apologize. I think we really interacted for the first time on confirmation retreat. Like we may have like bumped into each other before that time, but confirmation for Catholics is one of what we believe is seven sacraments, which we believe are guaranteed encounters with Christ. Confirmation, a lot of people treat it as it's kind of this coming of age or you deciding to be a Catholic. The actual theology is really encountering the Holy Spirit in a deeper way, being stirred in the Spirit and having kind of God's power unleashed in you, which is not what the average Catholic, I would say, consciously experiences during confirmation, even if theologically that's what we believe is happening. So we were on a retreat for you preparing for that. And that is where we kind of first met and hung out. My impression of you, this is going to be fun for you because I usually don't tell people what I think or anything like that. You get special treatment. My first impression of you was somebody who like, I was like, huh, I feel like this girl will probably get confirmed, but I don't know if she'll stick around afterwards. but I thought, it was the first time I met you. It was the first time I met Megan. And I thought you guys were just really great. I loved the energy. I loved you guys' general approach to just reality, which, you know, not every teenager. I love different teenagers for different reasons, right? I always like enjoy hanging out with different ones for different reasons. But you guys were just, I felt like, very honest, even if sometimes maybe trying a little bit too hard, but very, very honest. About kind of where you were at. And I thought that was great. And I'd send it to them. That was really rare for me in a real treat. I don't know that trying too hard came out quite the way I wanted it to. I feel like you know what that means, but I don't know that everybody else does. Do you feel
go ahead. We were pretty, I guess the word would be emo. We were definitely trying too hard in a lot of ways.
You guys are totally into the scene. We get it. I loved that you guys were kind of in touch in this way and real in this way that a lot of other young people at your age aren't. You were asking questions. I made this invitation that I wanted you guys to, you know, come in and potentially try out leadership and be a part of youth ministry afterwards. And the reality is I feel like you guys always used to ask me who was my favorite. I know Preston Wren, one of the other youths, always used to ask me who was my favorite. I will say that time of ministry at that parish, those 3 years that I got to spend with you guys, were some of the most fruitful and transformative and taught me more about myself as a minister than probably any other time that I've worked for the church, right?
Preston was definitely your favorite, though.
I don't know that he was. I think my response always used to be like, if you were my favorite, I would never tell you that you were. And then he would be like, so I am. And I'm like, well, if you were, I would never tell you.
I wouldn't tell you.
I said, but also if you weren't, I would never tell you. So maybe I'll tell Father Parrish who my favorite was in the post interview if he asks. So that now you're hooked. Now you got to listen.
Absolutely.
Let's step back for a second. I want to come into adult life. Tell me a little bit more about your journey in high school. Like, I would love to hear from the other side. This is totally a vanity interview for me, right? I would love to hear from the other side, kind of a little bit more targeted. What was your journey kind of preparing for confirmation, going into leadership? What are some of the main things you remember? What are some of the main things that kind of stood out to you about your journey as a young Catholic teenager who I would say is in the same place as a lot of people who used to be Catholic, that your story of drifting away is something I hear a lot from people, but I would love to hear kind of in high school, as you went through that journey of preparing for confirmation into leadership, what are some of the memories or things that stand out to you as far as your spiritual life?
Yeah, absolutely. so the first thing that I remember is being really mad at my parents for making me go, which I think is common. So I'd been going to Sunday school since I was a little kid. And I think, you know, it's set up very much like school, which is just naturally like you're going to be adverse to it. And I was at a place in my life where I was questioning everything because I was at 15 and that's what you do. And so I went on this retreat. It was before confirmation. And I think the first thing that I really remember is meeting you and you saying something about how just because we're on this retreat doesn't mean we need to get confirmed. Just because our parents said that we should doesn't mean we have to. And that this weekend wasn't really about that. It was about figuring out if it's something that we wanted, and that you personally would like help mitigate it if we came out of that weekend thinking that it wasn't something that we wanted. And from that point, that was kind of a turning point for me, because up until that point, it didn't feel like a choice. And so I think from then on, I fell into it a little bit more. I realized like I could get something out of this and it could be something that, I wanted to do. So I sort of went into it a little more open-eyed. So there was a lot of activities and like group bonding, which, was nice for me. The comments about my, trying too hard to be emo didn't give it away earlier. I was a little bit of a loner in high school. So being part of a community was really nice. And then, I remember the minute actually that I decided that I would go through with it and have my confirmation. I think there was I don't exactly know what to call it. I forget what the word was, but it was like a group meditation.
Was it during adoration or was it like
adoration. Yeah. Okay. And like, I just sort of felt like it was the right thing for me. And, you know, out of nowhere, just sort of this feeling like it was something that would be really good. Which looking back now, regardless of where I am in my religious or spiritual life, it was the right thing for me. Because from then on, post confirmation, I joined the leadership group, which was one of the best groups of friends that I've ever had. We haven't really stayed hugely in touch, but looking back, it was just really transformative from being a teenager to being adult, being part of this group of people. And so that was my teenage years as a young Catholic leader.
We haven't ever really talked about this. And if it's not, we may cut this part out, because I don't know how I'll even feel about it afterwards. So, one thing that happened is like, we had this great teen leadership program. You were going through it. Your freshman year, I don't know, it was my first year there. I don't think it was. I think it was my second year. Second year. But then like I left halfway through my fourth year. Not pleasantly either for anyone. And I will say, no. I think potentially the most devastated person in that process may have been your father. Don't know that that's true, but I think Greg Leo may have been more upset than possibly anyone else. And I don't know what that did to you guys. And I actually always wonder about this. I, as somebody who invests in the lives of young people, and then when you change communities, there's kind of this need to step back and let somebody else step into that relationship. And this is kind of like super insider baseball Catholic youth ministry stuff. But from a teenager's perspective, for you guys, for you personally, you don't have to speak for anybody else, what was that like?
To be totally honest, I don't really know what that did to the group, because I just sort of stopped. I don't think that it was like a conscious decision. It just didn't really feel like the community that I wanted to be part of anymore. And that was kind of my first moment where I was like, oh, like everything's not sunshine and rainbows. And it was jarring. It was, it wasn't great. I'll say that. It wasn't great. I stayed friends with everybody. And everybody, you know, I would still say we're on good terms, even if we don't talk all the time. But yeah, I kind of stopped going to the actual meetings and events and things like that. And I know my family took a step back a little bit too. So yeah, it was a time of sort of transition, and I don't think I ever really found anything like that again.
No, I mean, I remember for a couple of weeks you guys drove down. I went and started helping out at a Paris that I used to work at, and was, I did some contract work at Mary Immaculate, a Paris nearby. But for a few weeks, you guys like driving down, and the hardest thing I ever did, and I didn't tell you guys this, I wept after I did it. Like one night after you, because you guys were driving like 35 minutes to come to this other parish.
Yeah.
And so because I was, you know, teaching there, and I was there and I was present, and you guys knew a number of youth from there. But I remember one night telling you guys should not come, and that you guys should like be engaged at, you know, the parish. And then I got in the car on the way home with my wife, and I just wept. Because, I'll be honest, like for me, that moment was realizing, like when people talk about our God being a jealous God, like that moment of saying like, what's good for you guys is to be with your families and where you're planted in that parish and to help things grow and thrive there. Like, I didn't want to say that. Like, that was not what was in my head.
Because
you guys were mine. Like, you guys were mine, and I loved you, and I cared about you, and I had invested in you, and I had relationships with you. And that's, I think, one of the hardest parts about religious relationships, period, especially one of the biggest challenges in youth ministry, is kind of how some of those things impact each other, right? And so that was, for me, I think, the hardest part of that entire process. Though leaving was hard, and not being at that parish anymore was hard. Like having it, like, to say that to you guys with a straight face and meaning it, right? But but that not wanting to say it at all was one of the hardest things I've ever done as a professional minister. And so now you said you went to college, and you said for the first couple of years you would have considered yourself Catholic, but you never really connected with community. What is it like to be somebody, you know, your age who's Catholic and goes to college? Like, what was your experience of trying to engage as a Catholic at collegiate level, or was that a part of what you tried to do?
Yeah, I'm not maybe the best person to speak to this because I didn't put a huge amount of effort in, I will say that. I knew where the Catholic Church near campus was. Of course, the reason I knew where it was is because my dad would teasingly ask all the time, like, oh, do you even know where the church is on campus? Do you even know what it's called? And so I made a stubborn sort of teenage choice to memorize the address of it so that I could be like, yes, I know where it is. It's right here. It's called this. but I never made an effort to sort of, I know there were on campus Catholic groups. There was a Catholic church that specifically catered to students. And I never really made the effort to go check it out. Because at that point, I think I'd already sort of started separating myself a little bit culturally and politically. And I think when you're 18, you're really unsure of yourself in a lot of ways. And I don't think I was ready to be part of a community that I felt would challenge me until I had that all figured out and squared away. Mm. And so I didn't make that effort to sort of reach out. And I think also just my group from high school was so cozy and comfortable and had grown for so many years. And I'm a very conflict and effort adverse person. If it's going to be hard in any way, I don't generally like to try to do it. And I think when I was younger, that impulse was much stronger, and I didn't really have the tools of coping with it yet. So I just avoided the whole situation.
That's awesome. Now, you've mentioned a couple times that you have this kind of these political leanings or ideas that you feel are like incongruous with your faith of origin, that they don't connect with the what the average Catholic politically believes. What are some of those things that you really saw as barriers or differences between you and what you think the average Catholic views politically?
Sure. So I think just to say from the get-go, economically, I think me and Catholics have a lot in common, just sort of very equitable minded and charitable, and things like that are important. But just on this social level, Catholicism it's not the most conservative. And I think there's definitely room for a diversity of belief. But I'm pretty hard left wing, just in any possible way that you can slice it. And it's not something I saw reflected a lot in the communities that I was part of. And it's just something that I realize there are tenets about, and there are scholars who talk about it, and religious leaders, and there's all sorts of doctrines in place that I feel like are sort of against what I generally believe, like gay marriage and abortion rights and just things of that nature, that I've never really been on the same page as like the quote, like average Catholic. Although I know that there's a ton of varied beliefs within the community. It's just never something that I've sought out. And when I was developing those beliefs, like never really something that I felt like I had the opportunities to seek out, being in such a sort of insecure place.
What do you think is one of the greatest goods that the Catholic Church gives to the world?
I think the Catholic Church is one of the forefront runners of, forgive my use of the word, but like socialist structures. Just giving people what they need, like helping the poor, helping the impoverished, making sure that the wealthy don't feel above those who don't have those same luxuries. I think in that way, it's a amazing power. The Pope we have right now, Pope Francis, has always been very outspoken about that. And it's something that I've really appreciated, especially watching some of the things that are going on currently. I think having a strong and respected voice in that conversation is huge.
What do you think is one of the greatest areas where the church needs to be challenged or to grow?
I think there's a lack of acknowledgement that when the church was in development and when everything was going on, there was a huge lack of female voices in that conversation. And I think it's something that will be really hard to reconcile because there are structures in place that make it that way. And I think too, some of that is rooted in very good impulse to keep what is beautiful and traditional about the church alive. But at the same time, I think it's important to just realize, like, when all of these conversations were happening, women weren't part of it. They just weren't. And so maybe things would look different if they were. That goes for all of history. And so I think the church kind of has this unfortunate, it's part of history. Mm-hmm. It's so historical and old. And so it has the same problem, I think, that countries have, and all religions have, well, most religions have, and governments have. And it's just that there has been a general lack of demographic diversity in their creation, which then leads to sort of systemic problems that reach into the future from there.
So one of the, and we talked about this the last time I saw you when I was in Indianapolis, I was there for the National Catholic Youth Conference, which you got to go on to Atlanta when you were in high school. And one of the things we talked about when I was there is one of my proudest moment as a youth minister was with you in NCYC Atlanta when we had these really aggressive fundamentalist Christians trying to spit at priest and threaten to beat me up and talk about how we were all heathens and handing out like Halloween tracts, even though Halloween was a couple weeks before. I think they were just like the leftover, like Jack Chick, super offensive conservative tracts. And you walked up and you said, "Hey, I'll take your, you know, your pamphlet if you take my rosary," which was just like, I mean, at that moment, we all should have known, like, you know, a degree in rhetoric was in your future. That was one of my proudest moments. And then we got to kind of reconnect a couple of weeks ago, and you got to come hang out with my team behind the scenes at NCYC as we were at our house. You said you felt like we were crushing some of your childhood memories. as an adult who grew up Catholic, who no longer practices, if you had to give a piece of advice or some sort of insight to your younger selves or to the Catholic young people who are graduated or the Catholic young people who were present in NCYC, what would you say?
I would say that if it's something that's important to you and it's something that you feel makes you a better person and it's something that you want to continue doing, then it is so important to actively seek out community, to not be like me and so afraid that you might not fit in, that you just sort of drop something that was really important to you. So if it's something you want to keep doing, and if it's something that you have deeply considered and think improves not only like yourself, but the others around you, you have to make it part of what you are prioritizing. You have to keep it at the forefront because it's not something that you can just expect to present itself to you. It's something you have to look for, especially if you're someone who has the really special attachments to people within your religious community and then for one reason or another, have to find a new one. Like, you have to put the work in.
Are there times for you where you still wish you had the same kind of faith you had in high school?
For a while, there definitely was. And then I sort of evaluated on this level that I've been talking about, like, does it make me a better person? And I think it did. And I think one day it could again. But I think I'm at a place in my life right now where, and I think this is just an effect of being in your 20s in 2017, where there's a lot to look around and think that it's going wrong. So I'm at a place in my life right now where the idea of any sort of higher authority, deity, it's just going to give me someone to direct anger onto. And that's not, if I'm going to have a relationship with God or a God or a spirituality, that's not how I want it to be. So it's a part of my life that I'm sort of consciously putting aside for right now. I don't know in the future, but for right now, I'm not regretful. I think I got a lot out of it, and I think it's made me a really more self-assured person. But at the moment, I'm pretty content where I am.
No, I like that. So at the end of every interview, I just offer people that if they have a question they'd like to ask me that's not who was my favorite youth, then I am happy to answer that question for them. Do you have one you'd like to ask?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were our youth minister, you were, I think, 21 or 22.
I was very young. Yes.
Yeah. And so I'm 27 now, and I couldn't imagine doing anything like that. So just looking back and being able to reflect on it now, like, what was that like for you? I know how you changed us, but how, what effect did that have on you?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, for people who don't know, I started working for the church as an intern straight out of high school when I was going to college also. And then my first full-time position, I think I started when I was 21. I was married. I had a kid on the way already too. My wife and I got married very young. She's a few years older than me though. And I knew from the time I was 16 that I wanted to be a youth minister, to invite people into a relationship with Jesus specifically. And so when I started at the parish there, Our Lady of Angels, I knew what I was doing in theory. And the good thing was I had had 2 years to kind of be an intern and to practice and to kind of get an understanding of what church life looked like. But I had never actually run a youth ministry before, but that parish had never had a youth ministry before. So it was a really wide open field to kind of figure out, hey, what should this look like? What does this look like? Which is one of my favorite things to do. Like, I am super wired around the idea and initial strategic phases of things. Like, that's what drives me. That's my jam. Like, taking disparate chaos and merging it into some sort of form and function, specifically that helps people. Man, that's my favorite thing to do. And you know, I had somebody in high school who invested in me, who had really empowered us to be leaders. And so I'd been thinking about what I thought good youth ministry leadership looked like for years, what good youth ministry looked like. I'd seen a lot of different things. And so I was pretty ready to unleash that, right? And to actually do it. And so having the freedom to actually do those things was pretty amazing. You know, some of the things I learned was, it doesn't matter how good you do, if you don't dress the way your boss wants you to, you're never doing a good enough job. Some other things I learned, youth ministry is not complicated, but it is hard. Like, I think a lot of people want to think that youth ministry or ministry in general is really complicated. And it's not, I don't think it's complicated to love people and try to introduce them into a relationship with others and with Jesus. I do think it's hard work. And it's hard in the sense of it takes a lot of effort. It also is hard in the sense that it's heartbreaking a lot of the time. You know, and you guys really taught me that. Like, you taught me that it's not fun and games. It is hard work. And you guys taught me, again, some of the hardest lessons I've ever had around ministry I learned at that parish. And there are even still things that, you know, I struggle with today because they're part of how I'm wired. But for me, there was so much excitement around that. And the, you know, we had all kinds of different ministry stuff we do, but specifically that leadership group, that was a mix of people who were invited and people who self-selected. Watching you guys grow and watching you guys take ownership of things. And I think you and Megan, one time we were doing like a pirate themed lock-in. I don't know why it was pirate themed, but you guys were like convicted that we were going to have a shirt station. And I was like, that sounds really ridiculous, but okay, we'll do a t-shirt station. And so we made t-shirts, or we made a mess in the corner, and I probably got yelled at the next week. But it was totally worth it to like have you guys have ownership over this piece. So actually being able to like give other people, give young people chunks of things. Like I got in an argument with somebody online the other day who was asking like, you know, why did, you know, like, who was basically saying we shouldn't let young people lead things. And I was like, well, that's stupid. And you know, the other thing was capacity, and you know, they may not be, you know, full disciples yet, and they may not, like, they can't always drive a car, and they can't, you know, they have limitations on their time and all these other things. And I was like, so do adults. Mm-hmm. Like, there are adults who are immature disciples. There are adults who can't drive a car. There are adults who have limits on their time. Like, there are all these things that you're saying about young people are true for adults also. So you guys really showed me this real strong capacity for young people to do just tremendous things that was more than just me as a young adult thinking it was possible. Like, you guys put it into reality. And I loved that. I also just loved watching that community form in a way that was beyond me, right? Like, as much as like, I do know that when I left, a lot of it fell apart. I think that was because of the way it happened, not because I was necessarily essential to it. And I think that was so tremendous. I also will say Greg Leo, more than anyone else, because I'm just going to give your dad a lot of love, taught me the best way to recruit leaders in ministry, adult leaders, was to have like a 250-pound man get up at the pulpit and cry about how much he loves youth ministry at two out of the three masses, because then you never have to recruit again, because people are excited about how serving has changed their life. And so and I love seeing how all you guys' different gifts came into play in that. And I do still enjoy, like, even though it's a lot of it's just like Facebook stalky, like checking in on like you and Megan and Lily and Preston and Chris and all these guys, and seeing where you guys have gone in life, which are all very different places. And so, you know, I think for me, that's a lot of it. And so, yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. It's really neat to get sort of a look into it now, as an adult, and just sort of see like all the work that went into it. So appreciate it.
I love it. And then the other thing I offer is, if the person's comfortable with it, if they would be okay with me praying for them or with them. And if the answer is no, that's okay.
No. Yes, absolutely. I loved it when I was younger, and I think it would be equally comforting and wonderful now.
Well, I'll ask you, is there anything specific you want prayer for?
At this point, just sort of general happiness and continued well-being.
Okay. Cool. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. God, thank you for this opportunity to sit down and enter into a deep conversation with a young person who is now a full-grown person, who I just deeply love, who has meant so much to me and means so much to me, God. And I know that she means so much to you, that we all do, that we all are loved by you. And I would pray for Claire that you would just magnify joy in her life, allow her to experience joy of being the person who you created her to be fully and truly, and that she wouldn't get trapped in idealized or false versions of herself, but really see herself for who she truly is. I would ask that you keep her safe, that you keep her healthy, that you bless her relationships with those around her, and that you watch over all of her family, especially Greg and Marta and her brother. Just thank you for this opportunity and ask you to keep us. I saw this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
All right. So if people want to know more about your Wednesday night D&D role-playing sessions, where do they find more information?
About specifically our Wednesday night D&D sessions?
I'm just kidding. Is there anything you want to give a shout out for?
No. Well, board games, actually. And I know I made fun of you when we were younger for this, but
you did. You used to call my board games grown-up Pokemon, which isn't
wrong.
Inaccurate. I mean, you could call Pokemon little kid versions of what I did. I'm just saying. All right, so yeah, you shared about a board game recently online. Go ahead and play.
Oh yes, okay. So there is a Kickstarter up right now. A friend of mine made an amazing board game. It's called Dice Wars. And it's a strategy game, but instead of using miniatures, you use dice that sort of keep track of what your troops are. It's really awesome. I've played it a lot of times, and I've lost miserably a lot of times. And there was one point where my husband betrayed our alliance in the game so badly that I got mad at him in real life. So if that sounds like your jam, it's called Dice Wars, and it's on Kickstarter, and it's really cool.
And I will put a link down in the show notes also. So if you are interested in that, please let it know. I actually know. I looked at it the other day. It looks pretty amazing. And so I think I'm going to kickstart it so that Father Parrish and I can play it with some of our friends up here. Also, just so you guys know, based on this last episode before this one and next episodes, we're not slowly turning this into a board game podcast. That's just a lot of who I hang out with. Are people who love really cool things. And then sometimes youth who I spent time with who used to make fun of me for it fall in love with board games and role-playing games also too as adults. So I hope you guys will stick around after the break. Father Parrish and I sit down to talk about what we took away from Claire and my conversation. Father Parrish, how are you doing tonight?
Good. It's nice to be at a round table with the other knights here.
Yeah, so we actually joined live in living room by my wife and my good buddy, Michael Romo, who is, I think, other than my wife, probably been sitting in the room for more conversations quietly in the background than any other threshold listener. And so it's good to have them here. We just finished up packing all kinds of stuff for Catholic Bomb Co. and getting it out of the house for people for their Christmas presents. And our house is a disaster. And we have no Christmas decorations up, and we have done no shopping. Well, we wouldn't have Christmas decorations up anyways because it's still Advent. They'd just be Advent decorations right now. And they'd magically transform into Christmas decorations in the short window of time between the fourth Sunday of Advent and Christmas Eve this year, which is about 30 minutes.
And yeah. So, yeah. I was thinking, like, you know, what I want to do is I want to invent, like, an LED, like, a minimalist version of an Advent wreath.
Just because?
Yeah, I think it'd be really fun. Like, I'm Danish, and so they're all about, like, total design aesthetic and minimalism. Why not have, like, a wicker wreath with, you know, kind of these really, really well-designed kind of Advent candle color things.
And then when you pop up in the top, it's also a toaster?
Like, yeah, or you know, I don't know, like despair. But
just inside, it's just filled with despair. So that's awesome. So, Father, this week I sat down with Claire. Claire's a previous youth of mine. It was really challenging for me to not overshare like just talk about my stuff, which I did, I think, more than I normally do. That's kind of part of the reality of when you're in a relationship with somebody and you're having one of these conversations. Like, it's a lot more, it's not as probative as mine are. It's not like just one-sided. It's actually a conversation typically. So, but with that said, was there anything you took away from Claire, the conversation I had with Claire?
Yeah, I was like really kind of like impressed by her, her emphasis. She really needs community, right? And I think that's something that, a lot of our generation isn't always kind of aware of, right? Like her kind of, even her mention of giving the shout out at the end to her,
the Dice Wars game.
The Dice Wars, yeah. Like, I inferring meaning not knowing, but inferring that she probably has a community of individuals that she gets together with regularly to play with.
Wednesday nights, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, you were serious about that
part? Yeah, no, that was not a joke. So it's really funny. So Claire at one point did, when she was in high school, while playing like board games with me regularly, try to give me sass about how our board games were like juvenile and silly whenever she didn't want to play them. And she called them grown-up Pokemon, which is whatever, right? Like, it gives me flashbacks to all the horrible things my wife says to me.
Yeah, you had like the best like high school comeback saying like, well, what if it's just...
What if Pokemon's just little kid versions of this game? Yeah. So she plays with Dungeons and Dragons on
Wednesday
nights with a group of friends.
So she has like a really strong awareness of her need for community, which I thought was good. Like that's lovely. Yeah. I'm really happy to hear that there's that part of her humanity is so not censored.
Yeah. No, and when I first asked her on, it was really interesting. Her response was like, you know, I haven't done anything especially spiritual for the last, you know, 8 years was kind of her response.
And also, her ability to be honest and just name, like, I know she wasn't, I mean, she was just being kind of candid, like, with it, saying, like, I would call myself apathetic.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think is a phenomenally candid thing to say.
Yeah. And accurate, right? Like, so right. And like, it seemed to very much be a right now. Maybe that's just me like hoping, like that's what she expressed also too. And Claire is very forthcoming. So if it wasn't, I think she'd just say it's not like, you know, this is not a thing for her right now. Like right now she doesn't care about it, but there's also like a level of like, you know, anger, like blocking guardedness around some of that.
I don't, you know, Claire, I don't have any kind of, never met you in the, in the, you know, in person. I've never had a conversation with you. I wasn't involved in the actual interview. And so, I mean, at the same time, I'm like, that's, I think that very few people are able to name, right, that kind of deep reality. You just kind of like threw it out there, like throwing a ball into someone else's yard to let us look at that, which I think was just super brave and courageous.
Yeah.
And, but that's also a place where, granted, I'm a priest, like, so I naturally kind of wade in those waters. And so I was like naturally attracted to that comment, like, ooh, hey, like, here's some deep existential reality. Let's play ball. Right.
Let's play around in that for a little while. Play in this space with me. Right.
Yeah. Like,
I also think like, when she told me that, one of the things I kind of named for her, and Claire's story is unique. It's her own. It's not the same story as everybody else, but what we experience right now, broadly in American culture, especially with people who are Catholics, is what we call sometimes the rise of the nuns, in O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S.
The rise of the nuns is a horrible B movie from 1978.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so starring,
like Gene Hackman. I don't know.
as Superior.
Yeah, as Mother Superior.
So, anyways, the rise of the nuns. You know, just basically people who don't identify as anything. It's not that they are don't have a spirituality. It's that their chosen spirituality is kind of like, at least for right now, nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing. I don't have one. I don't engage that part of myself. But the overwhelming majority of the nuns are people who used to be Catholic. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of the things she names, right? This decline of community, what they'll name is the number one reason they're no longer Catholic, is that they just drifted away, and lots of times that no one noticed, right? Mm-hmm. And Claire is even conscious kind of what she was doing, right?
I like that part where she had memorized the address of the Newman Center just to tell her father to like, you know.
Yeah.
Tee off.
I don't know if you know, understand how beautiful of a man Greg Leo is and how much I love that guy.
See some like Aslan figure?
He is pretty much an Aslan figure. He needs a beard in order to really complete it. But he's this huge like broad shoulder, like could wrap me up in a hug, and I'm a big guy.
I have this mental image of her father as either being like this bearded Aslan figure or having alopecia and looking like Mr. Clean.
It's somewhere in between.
Anyway.
He's got the affect of an alopecia Mr. Clean.
Ooh.
With the presence of a bearded Aslan.
Wow. That's like a spirit animal. Claire, your father's a spirit animal. Anyway.
That kind of decline is very normal. So I was interested in sitting down with Claire because for me, it's like, as a youth minister, lots of times you wonder about the long-term fruit, especially with a young person who you deeply care for, who you invested in, who you know is no longer practicing. And rarely ever do people actually take the time to like call them up and say, hey, would you be a guest on a podcast?
And that's something that I want to comment on too. Like just as I'm kind of sitting back here and praying about it real brief, it's she had mentioned on a couple of occasions about the reality of that, you know, one reason she drifted away was that, you know, she didn't perceive the church sharing her political views and that there was this kind of divide there and that she had a different value system. Right. And, I just kind of wanted to affirm just something in that by saying like, I also would drift away if it was just about values. If all of that I was given was kind of values, that would not attract me whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right. And I really just kind of want to, and that she was there was an intentionality behind that for her that she paid attention to. Mm. And so I just want to kind of affirm her freedom in that.
Yeah. Like I said, I've always really appreciated her ability to name things. It also really is interesting to see like the path she's gone on. It was also really interesting to hear her name some, for me, even though some of them are personal, to hear her name some moments about her process and her journey through specifically around confirmation, like what made her.
I'm surprised she remembered it.
I'm not, but only because I think everything I do is very important. But no, I mean, I'm not because I know how much of a change she went through that weekend. I was there. I was present for it. And it really was a and it was got to work, right? I believe.
That was the other thing that was for me important in her conversation was the fact that when I was, after I got confirmed as I made my profession of faith, I actually remember the point when I said, no, I don't want anything to do with this. I actually still remember that point.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So you always hide and lie about that part of your life. Is this podcast where I figured out kind of like that your story was, there were some other parts to it that I hadn't heard before. So wait, so there's this point for you where you'd done a profession of faith, you'd become Catholic.
Yeah.
But then you kind of had this moment of rejection. You just didn't automatically go into priest mode.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about that.
I mean, I thought we went over that in the interview.
I don't know that we did.
Like that I had a year of, like I had a year where I stopped, where I didn't care and I just stopped. I said that.
Oh, this is with the girl. This is like when you were dating the girl.
Yeah, but there was a year, that year was when I just kind of, well, anyway, the point being was, is that like, I remember the point. I was walking at St. Cecilia's up in Stanwood, which is, no one knows, needs to know where that is.
Where our largest listenership is, St. Cecilia's in Stanwood.
That would be strange and amazing. Anyway, sorry. It's like, sometimes I think that Stanwood is like the wet Washington equivalent of like the Muddle Puddles from anyway.
So it's about an hour north of Seattle, very rural environment.
Yeah, it's
very,
like,
blue collar, very, very like interesting.
Awesome people.
Awesome people. Yeah.
But and so just different. Anyway, yeah. So I was walking through the parking lot going to mass, right? I was going to mass because my girlfriend was like, had to go because her parents were forcing her to go. Right. And I remember seeing someone's bumper sticker that says you can't be both pro-choice and Catholic. Right. And I saw the bumper sticker and I said to myself, I can do what I want. And like, right. And that was a point where I realized that I had made the decision that this didn't matter to me.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
And anyway,
I think people have those moments. Right. And yeah. I think the hard thing is,
it's like weird. I still remember the bumper and the color and everything.
Yeah. Well, I think for a lot of those things, if it's the first time we've evaluated or considered something, those moments and those circumstances do stand out to us a lot of the time.
Anyway, sorry.
No, I mean, yeah. So, for me, Siri, it wasn't surprising that she remembered it for some of those same reasons. But I also loved two of the things that she named in that abstractly were she had an experience of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Someone basically saying like,
yeah,
make a choice and I got your back, right? I value this in you enough to say that if this isn't connecting right now, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we should name that and be honest, right? The other thing that she had an experience of was, you know, she it was like the moment of like real consolation that she had there, of really saying like I can and do desire this, was during adoration, which is what we would call exposition of the Blessed Sacrament, right? When we're putting what we believe to be the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ.
Also, that was super surprising that she still remembered that name, that word.
Yeah.
That was like,
yeah. Eh. So the reality is like, that, and then we spend time in that presence, loving and being loved by God. And so it was really interesting to me to hear somebody who is, you know, now non-affiliated, really still being able to name this experience of freedom and this mm-hmm. encounter being big turning points. And this desire to have things be, you know, to say, hey, if I experienced this relationship in any capacity when I was younger, and this was a group that was important to me and it was life-giving and fruitful, I desire that same kind of experience. And because I'm not in a place to be able to offer anything but anger right now, like, I don't want to go into that. That was a really interesting kind of reflection for her at the end.
Yeah, I guess the final things that I wanted to just kind of say that was interesting to me was the, yeah, the last part, of course, was super interesting for me about, like, when you asked her about, you know, what would you say to a younger person who was in the position of yourself, right? And, you know, that there's there's this kind of like background awareness, right, of you know, Claire's aware of her agency, which is impressive.
So are there any questions you want to have asked Claire?
Well, yes, Tony. Yeah, I'm just going to go on a limb on this one, right? This me is maybe actually more of a hope. I'm just going to be super free with it, but I would say like that place of anger that Claire, that you briefly mentioned, right? I don't think it's maybe the time in your life to go into that question, right? However, I would really like, I'm really curious about that, like to talk more about that anger sometime in the future, right? At whatever time. That one's like, that's a place where I think it's, I always view anger as a doorway. So, but it's an interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, she had kind of tossed out this thing, like we can always be better, right? That's something that her and John say to herself. And we normally don't kind of address things this way, but I guess I would, in that same context, when you're talking about a doorway, I would say that, like, if you're angry or think you would be angry at God, like, the reality is, like, we can always be better. And sometimes that actually requires us to be angry for a period of time. Like, it requires us to get stirred up about something. But that's a conversation for another time. So, Claire, thank you so much for being on for that conversation. You know, her and I have gotten a little disconnected, and we're really trying to commit to being a little bit more connected. I'm going to call Greg Leo on Christmas morning. Speaking of Christmas morning, it is coming up. So next week, our episode will probably come out on Thursday instead of Wednesday. And this one is going to be our last episode before Christmas. So for everybody out there, we hope that you have a Merry Christmas. You're going to have a lot of family, friends, other people in town over the break that you'll be seeing, that you'll be hanging out with. It's a natural time.
You don't need to listen to podcasts. Hang out with your family, unless you're me, who forsook that for the kingdom of God.
Or play them the podcast and then discuss it afterwards, either way.
Oh, yeah. You can do it. Dude, did I tell you about my friend's family? Right. So he emailed his family. He said, like, you know, we're all really Catholic, which they are. Right. They're all practicing still. Everybody, each generation. And there's a lot of there's a lot of people in each one. And, you know, we always talk about these things about the faith. Right. But no one ever talks about the relationship with Jesus. Right. And everybody was silent. And so I talked to him about it, like, hey, Nick, how'd it make you feel?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I think we got some work. But I saw it was like super fascinating. So I'm going to send this podcast to Nick and just be like, hey, Nick, play this for your family and see how many fires you light under your asses.
I mean, that's my thing. Like, you're going to be with family and friends this holiday season, right? You're going to be sitting down. You're going to be having time to talk about life and what's happened in this last year. People get naturally reflective. People start naturally asking questions about what they believe, what they think. And those can be tense moments, but they can also be moments where you really are able to receive the other person in a new and different way and express yourself in a new and different way. So this Christmas, this holiday season, whatever it is you practice or celebrate, I just want to encourage you guys to get out there to F and F ability and talk about what really matters with the people that you love most.